Item 9 is approval of the claims. I do have one addition to that. That's to First Interstate Bank. It's for TIF number 12 in Dolan Creek. It's for $48,371.30. This is a situation where we're basically a pass-through, the city of Sturgis is. The county pays the money to us, and then we pay it to First Interstate. So any questions on the claims from council?
From Hennepin College. That is for the community paramedic program that we've got 6 students going through. That is 100% reimbursed by the FEMA grant.
Mike, you have something there?
No, it's more of a comment. I can't find it. There it is. Yeah, just a comment on the charges for Cadle Thorsten to do our audit. I think that's almost highway robbery, but that's just a portion of it. What do we expect that total bill to be?
Yeah, we had an RFP on that, and they. Yeah.
I just think that's terrible.
Any other questions, comments, concerns on the claims?
Yes, on page 1 to D&M Rentals for the facade loan. Where is the location of that?
That is actually for Grocery Mart, the parking lot that they had planned on. That's to help on that. And it's a facade loan. It's part of our facade loan program.
New entrance. And is there a new entrance along with that?
No, just the parking lot. Yeah. I wish there was a new entrance, Mike.
How long do they have to pay back the loan then? What's the time frame on this?
I believe it was a 15-year.
And just to clear that up, that they're not proposing to do a facade. They're using that money for the parking lot.
Right.
Say that again, Ron.
I don't believe they're changing the facade of the Grocery Mart. They're using that for the whole parking lot and take right. care of all the potholes in the parking.
Is there a motion on the claims with the addition?
I'll take a shot at it. Make a motion to approve the claims with an addition, First Interstate Bank. Of $48,371.30.
Got it. Got a first by Steve.
Second.
Second by Dave. Can't tell who it was over there. We're paying bills here, so let's go ahead and roll call. Jason, we'll start with you, sir.
Yes.
Ron?
Yes.
Rhea?
Yes.
Becca?
Yes.
Steve?
Yes.
Dave?
Yes.
I'm yes. Terry?
Yes.
And Mike?
Yes.
Bills are paid.
Mayor?
Yep.
Just one quick. It is a 10-year loan. Daniel just texted me.
Yeah, I thought it was 10, but I wasn't sure, so I didn't speak up very loudly. Item 10 is public hearings. Subset A is a special event license for the Loud American at 1337 Main. This is during the motorcycle rally. All the information is included in the packet with insurance and everything, so I don't believe there's a need for a staff report. If there's any questions, comments, concerns from council on Subset A. About public input on this special event license during the motorcycle rally, basically on the corner of 4th and Main.
I'll move.
We have a first by Dave. Second by Rhea. Any last discussion? All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by stating yes.
Yes.
Opposed to no.
No.
That motion carries. Subset B is consideration of the 2019 to 2020 malt beverage license renewals, and I'll turn it over to you, Faye.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This is our yearly malt beverage renewal. This year there were 3 that did not renew, and so that knocked us back down to 40. We do The three that did not renew was J.J. Davenport, of course, Shopko, and then one of the Yes Ways. The one, it was actually the one that's up, yeah, Ranch Mart. And so I would have you move that to approve these renewals. I believe Ms. Deputy Sheriff, Police Officer Fresco, Assistant, has reviewed these and everything is okay.
Any questions from Council?
Yes, I have a question. I'm just curious. So all of the licensees have paid fees for the last 2 years, and that's how the activity is kept up?
Every year they renew, they pay the fees.
Okay. But, I mean, and so that's how, I mean, all of these are ongoing businesses that are open per South Dakota statute, right?
Yep. To address the question, I believe you're asking about are they, how actively they may be using the malt beverage license. And what state statute provides is there is a specific requirement that a full on-sale liquor license selling distilled spirits must be used a minimum period of time. There is no such requirement for malt beverage licenses. And so in the license application, Faye will correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe the applicant provides any information about periods of time where they're open or amount of sales or anything of that nature. It's just okay. The way the legislature has left the law.
So the codified law 32.2.53 only deals with liquor license, not
I don't beverage. Have it memorized, but so I can't
I just
tell
wrote
you.
It. I mean, I have it
if
here
it talks
me,
about...
But.
If it's the statute that refers to a minimum number of days for
yes,
which
a licensee... Yes, it's 6 days during the year, but that has to be during a special event that has over 25,000 participants. Yes.
That is correct. Blah, blah, blah. And when okay. The particular language of that statute, as I recall it, is it talks about an on-sale licensee. And when you go back through the definitions, that separates out distilled spirits, full-bore liquor from the malt beverage.
It used to be, and it may still be, that the license had to be enforced at least once in the previous 12-month period. In other words, if somebody would buy a six-pack and they would pay sales tax on that, it makes it a valid license for the entire year. I don't know if that's still I don't know if that language has been struck from the current regulation or not, but there used to be a requirement where it had to be used once, sales tax paid on it at least once in the previous 12 months.
Any other council questions, comments on the renewal malt beverage licenses? How about public input on this matter? And being heard, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the malt beverage licenses.
First by Ron.
Second.
Second by Jason. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by stating yes.
Yes. Yes.
Opposed to no. That motion carries unanimously. Subset C, it's a consideration for a retail on-off wine license and a retail on-off malt beverage license. So this will be on our list for next year if this gets approved. Faye, I'll turn it over to you.
That is correct. Family Dollar Stores out of North Carolina has made application for both a on-off sale malt beverage and South Dakota farm wine and also a on-off sale wine license. And everything has been checked out. They have provided all paperwork.
Any questions from council or comments about public input?
Well, I had a question. Is that a valid legal description that they submitted? I mean, I'm just curious because I've never seen one written.
You may be right. I never even read it. I just assumed. My bad. I I will look into this before it gets sent out, because Marnie will never accept it. It's not correct.
If I may, Mr. Mayor, the council's action here is for recommendation of approval, and the final approval will, of course, be made as a decision by the Department of Revenue. So, but I understand now, having had that pointed out, it is a unique description. But since this is a premises, the premises can be described in, doesn't necessarily have to be described as a, in the same degree of a legal description as would be required to record a document for transfer of title.
Got a comment, Bob?
Yeah, just a quick question. Do we, the city, are all the wine and beer licenses on off sale?
Yes. So this
is. So you don't have such a thing as an off sale only or an on sale only?
We used to, and still, until the state changed the laws and then put it all in this one category. And Faye, please jump in if you need to add stuff. But this is a recent change that the state did. They eliminated the difference between the on and the off sale, and they say cool. Now malt beverages are on off sale. Same with wine license.
So there's really no requirements for, if you are going to have a beer license, you would not have to be set up to sell on sale. You could sell strictly package if you wanted to.
And that's what the convenience stores are doing right now.
That's my
basically
point.
Basically, that's what they're doing. And they could, yeah. I mean, they're selling it off sale, but it is an on-off sale.
Great. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions, concerns, public or council? And I guess, as point of discussion, if so desired within the motion, if there's one made, it should discuss the addressing of the legal description.
Yes, that would be, and definitely I will, because it once it got to the state, it would come back to us again. So I will try to clarify, and because definitely, I assume that they've done this all over the United States, and I assume that they did it. They knew what they were doing, but they did not.
Well, maybe that's how they do it everywhere else, Faye.
And there's a possibility, yeah.
I guess I would move to approve then with proper legal description.
The first by Dave to approve the on-off wine and on-off malt beverage license with proper legal description. We got a second by Terry. Any last discussion? All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by stating yes.
Yes.
Opposed or no? That motion carries. Brings it.
Just a comment.
You bet. Go ahead, Mike.
I don't think there's any limit anymore on malt beverage licensing. No limit?
Well, in our ordinance, there is still that limit, but we're way over that limit. As the ordinance sits right now, we're at 22 is what the ordinance says.
I guess the correct statement would be in state law.
Oh, in state law, no, they don't control that at all, just the liquor licenses.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Brings us to subset D. This is consideration of Resolution 2019-37. This is the street closure for the 15th annual Fulton Street Bash. And Jerry's coming up for a staff report.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council. Again, this year, the Fulton Street Bash will be bringing hot rods and motorcycles together by Fulton Street. The event is scheduled is August 3rd. Street closure on Dakota Street between Fulton and the alley to the east is requested from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. They have held this event for several years. The only thing that they need from us is street closure and 300-gallon totes for garbage. So. And there is an applicant in the audience if you have questions.
Any questions from council?
Jason, have we ever had an issue there? I know of none.
Nope, I have
partaked, and it's a very well-run operation and everything, and they do a really good job and talk to the neighbors and everything else, and it's a known thing in the neighborhood that it's always going to be that first weekend of the rally there.
Looking at the package that's associated with this, can you hear?
Yep.
Looking at the package that's associated with this, I would hope that the council would again take a look at this package, and it'd become the standard for everything to come in the future. I'm assuming Mr. Bradley is the one that did this package. It's the only one I've seen in the last couple of years that is even remotely outstanding.
As you can see in the package, he even sends letters out to all of his neighbors, and I've attended it too in the past, and it is a well-run situation. They do have a band, and I don't think anyone ever complains.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
We got a first by Jason, a second by Mike. Any other public or council input on the street closure and use for the annual Fult Street Bash? All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by stating yes.
Yes.
Opposed to no. That motion carries unanimously. Thanks, Jerry. Subset E, this is a use under review for a year-round drive-through coffee kiosk at 1102 Junction. Dave, welcome back. Don't take us down one of those paths of discussion.
Good evening again. This item before you is an application from Bob Bertolotto, the owner of 1102 Junction Avenue. He submitted a conditional use and review application to operate a year-round drive-up coffee kiosk from a temporary structure. The structure would be approximately 144 square feet, and per the ordinance would not require a building permit if it was under that 144 square feet. If he decided to go over, then it would require a building permit. The use and review will need to be considered because the city ordinance currently does not allow a permanent business to operate from a temporary structure. Notifications 18 were sent out. No response was 7. We received 7 that didn't come back. Approval was 41% or 9, which includes the property owner. Disapproval were 2 or 4.48%. And some of the comments received by the landowners are available as an attachment in here. This was presented at the planning and zoning meeting, discussed and approved. And forgive me, I don't remember what the vote was. It was unanimous.
Any questions for Dave from council?
Dave, I have one. The structure that's at the grocery mart, Is it a temporary structure?
It is a trailer, but considered a temporary structure because it is blocked up and it's not sitting on the actual wheels. That is a non-conforming pre-existing use. That was there prior to the ordinance change of not allowing. So if he were to, the owner of that were to want to change, remove that building and put a new one in, we'd probably look at it and say, well, maybe we need to get the use on review because everybody else is.
How about if she sold it up there or anybody sells it when it's in that
if
situation?
If it sells and it doesn't change the use, it'll continue to be that non-conforming pre-existing.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions from council?
I guess I have another one I'd like to ask Bob. You're requesting to be on both sides with traffic, is that a necessary thing, you feel?
What we've got in mind there is where I'm going to place the kiosk used to be the drive-up for the credit union when it was a credit union. And our goal there is to have traffic going both ways. They can either come in from the north or they can come in on my driveway from Junction Avenue. If they come in on Junction, it's a straight shot through. If they come in on the north side, of course, it's pretty much a straight shot through. They'll have to make a jog and still come out where the ingress is on Junction Avenue. But traffic has been in and out of there for years prior to my time being there. And It's just a convenience thing as much as anything, having it both ways.
Dave, go ahead, Bob.
From what we've looked at and so forth, we feel that the majority of the traffic will be going north.
The way they have it, the way it's set up right there in this diagram, that's okay with the site triangles and everything, I assume.
Yeah, Dave. That's correct. It is.
Bob, one thing, I guess the building itself, the one picture in the packet here with the little front porch and everything, is that?
That's the goal, something similar to that.
Okay, because yeah. I didn't know, Dave, would it be the front porch be considered the 144 square foot?
That will be considered part of that, yes, if it's covered.
All right.
And frankly, wasn't sure about that when we made the application. There is a chance that we may do we may need to get the permit. I think Dave said, what, $89 to put? I'm thinking, honestly, 144 square foot in the structure itself plus a porch, you know, plus a walk-in porch on it. So it's not going to be much bigger. If I need to get another permit for that, why, I'd be more than happy to do so. It'll be a nice-looking structure. My goal is we're going to be doing some remodeling on our building. I shouldn't say remodeling, some maintenance, and it'll probably be color coded to match the building. So it'll look nice.
What about your sign pole there, Bob? Is it, looks like your building sitting right on top of the sign pole.
Well, no, well, actually that's where my power's at. That sign pole looks a little closer to the street. I know that's an aerial view, but I've got, of course, all kinds of power at that sign pole, and that's where my power will come from. Yeah, that just doesn't look right. It's like...
You can see the curb there.
Yeah, that's got to be it, but it looks out of place there, so...
So you've been on that property, but that's the part that if you're coming in from, you know, the east, and you're gonna be going on the right side of it, right? You're the arrow pointing this way. Then they've got to go out on your curb, on your inlet. It's down the block a little bit, right?
Yeah, right where you see the point of my building pointing towards Junction
right.
Avenue.
But there's a driveway. That's there. What I was wondering is there enough room from the sign to get around that?
There is.
Yeah. The black line just depicts the property lines themselves. There actually is a setback there. If you look, you can see the curb, so there's quite a bit of distance to drive between the curb and the sign.
Oh, I see it now.
So I'm just wondering, where in the ordinance does it state that the permit's not needed because of the size of the structure?
It's in Title II in the building code. Anything 144 square feet and under does not require a building permit. That was put in there for basically lawn sheds.
Okay. What about the temporary structure permit? Is that required for
Well,
this?
If temporary structure permits are basically more for like tents for the rally.
But I think it states vending stands too.
Yeah, vending stands. This... If you look at it, under 144 square feet is considered a temporary structure. So if it's on skids and he puts it on the parking lot, it doesn't require a building permit, but the use and review is required because they can't operate the business out of the temporary structure. And I think that was when that was put in place. It was to basically look after food trucks, food trailers,
right,
things like that.
And so my other question is, so use on review, even though it doesn't specifically state in Title II anything about use on review can be used for any ordinance that needs to be modified. Is that right? Or should it be a variance?
Use on review is more of a, in this case, I guess, yeah, not any ordinance, and we'd look at it differently. Through different ordinances. I mean, we can't give a variance to a building code, because a building code is just that. In this case, you get the use on review, and then it's looked at every year. And, of course, you're giving him the ability to run a business out of a temporary structure where the ordinance says you can't.
So when it states an at-home business, is that just kind of a misprint on page 9?
I don't have that in front of me.
Okay. Where it says use on review, annual review, at-home business.
That's
probably should just be business.
Yeah, that's in Title 18, I think.
It is. But, I mean, it also states that Article 7, Section 2, it allows for a business to complete a use on review application, not an at-home business. Is there a difference between those two? Like,
I don't think so. No, it's just one application for any use on review, whether it be at home or, in this case, in a temporary structure.
Any other questions? Public input on this. Bonnie, come on up.
As I go over this, I'm seeing several contradictions in that this is a temporary structure, and this, under recommendations, says temporary structures need to be less than 120 square feet. And then I know we've talked about whether or not it needed a building permit and a foundation and that sort of thing on things that are 144. So I'm kind of confused about that.
That should be 144, not 120.
Well, it says 120.
I know. It should be 144.
So where did this come from?
That was
Is
prior.
Is it that way in
that
Title
II? That was prior Title II when it was changed.
So why aren't we pulling current information when we do this?
We made a mistake.
So then we're up to 144 plus square feet, which is bigger than the 12 by 12. Have to put permanence to. So then I'm questioning that. Why is there not a variance involved if we're not staying to the parameters? We're talking about a temporary structure, so it's movable. Is that what we're saying?
That's correct.
Is this movable? Yeah. Okay, and it says as long as the structure does not interfere with visibility or traffic flow onto high public right of way. I use this intersection a lot. It's my route to Shirley's house. So I go through this intersection a lot, and there have been multiple times that I have called the business and said, geez, could you get this moved a little bit? It's blocking the view. I can't see far enough ahead if someone's coming for crossing that intersection. Now, your folks have always been really cooperative, and it gets done.
I was going to say, you've never spoken to me about it.
No, I've never spoken to you. It's usually
if you have an issue, just call me, and I can guarantee I'll take care of it.
Well, and I don't know how to—I don't—
It's at the same number you called the office with.
Well, I called the office and I raised the issue and the ladies have addressed it. One time it took a couple of weeks for it to get addressed, but for the most part they've been responsive to that. But it's been signs, it's been things for sale, it's been food vendors. So what happens once this is placed and it's supposed to be okay where it is, but it turns out in practice not to be okay where it is, what's going to happen then? So, not in the last couple weeks. I haven't had an issue in the last couple weeks because I haven't been cruising in the last couple weeks. I'm doing 24/7 home care right now.
I purposely
I just haven't been out there.
You've probably seen I'm also a dealer for the mini barns, which is actually who is going to build our kiosk for us. And I specifically put those buildings where they were set for about 2 weeks to see if I got any complaints, which I got zero. I wanted to make sure there was plenty. In fact, I walked out in the street to make sure that there was not a visibility issue. And I can tell the council there will not be a visibility issue in that corner.
And I'm not saying that there is. I'm just saying I haven't been out and about, so I don't know, but it's been problematic in the past. And I don't want to see something planted there that's going to be too much trouble to move. You know, we went through this with Iron Horse, and they did a temporary structure in the wrong place, and then we gave them a variance for it being in the wrong place, and now we get to live with it.
We will ensure that when this building is placed, it meets the site triangle that's set up in the ordinance of 35 feet from the intersection to each side and come across. Where it sits right now, and Laura and I did go out and measure when Bob had the sheds out there, and it more than exceeds the 35-foot site triangle requirement.
So what's the consequence if the site triangle just doesn't work in practice? We have recourse on that.
If the building is placed within the site triangle, there's nothing in the ordinance that says, unless it becomes an issue where the police department gets a complaint, and they'll have to verify if it's in the site inside the site triangle or not.
Okay, this is a particularly bad corner. So I'm just saying, if the site triangle doesn't work, do we have any recourse? Apparently we don't.
Well, the site triangle is set in the ordinance specifically so that when you pull up to the stop sign on Sherman Street, you're able to see both left and right traffic, and also the people coming down Junction Avenue. That's not controlled. They're free to go, so the person on that right needs to stop.
Right.
There should be enough room there.
And she does. Because I see in this one picture, is this the ice cream bus that's there in this picture? The ice cream bus looks like a camper.
That wasn't an ice cream bus. That was a camper.
All right. Well, when the ice cream bus was there, it was a problem, and the folks were really nice about it, and they put it someplace. You know, the next time they parked it differently. And so I just want to be sure that we don't create a problem. I have seen these two little guys here. I haven't been down this street lately to pay attention to it, and I didn't know anything about this. Saw these little baby barns there. And so I just want to be sure that we don't move forward and create a problem for ourselves and then not want to fix it because it's too much trouble for somebody. So I raise those questions just that, I mean, we seem to have a lot of discrepancies here between the request and what ought to be. And that always makes me uncomfortable when those things slide right on through the Planning Commission, so I just wish to raise them that we look as we should at this. Let me peel through my notes here. But, you know, one of the comments said, well, it would probably be okay. So that says that person has some doubts. Hope it's not too congested during the rally. So that comment has some doubts. So if the application is denied where the information submitted at public hearing fails to substantiate all the findings, what's the time frame on that? I mean, it's not there, so we don't know if it's going to substantiate. What if it doesn't? Does the application get, you turn it around and then deny it? I just don't want to be adversely affected or have somebody hit in an intersection because we've set up another blind spot. So, and that speaks to required findings, jeopardize, endanger, or otherwise constitute a menace.
Bonnie, this is a use on review, which means if there are complaints, he'll have to come before the council again in a year or so.
But that would not be until after it's there, and what's it take, 4 more years? How long?
Looked at every year.
Every year.
And if we get a substantial amount of complaints prior to that, we can ask him to come before Planning and Zoning and City Council within that year at any time.
Okay. But as I'm looking at the document, and if we're not following our expectations on the documents, you know, when do we start marching our own march? You know, there's one here that says landscaping and maintaining of grounds. You know, we turn screws on Taco John's over landscaping, and there's no landscaping on this property. Is this property exempt from landscaping? You know, signs and outdoor advertising. Will there be signs set out there in the yard that says, oh, this is our special for the day? I mean, what do we expect here? And I bear you no ill. And these little coffee shops are cute, and they're doing business, and they serve a purpose, and they generate for us. I just use that particular intersection a lot. And I want to be sure we don't make it worse instead of better.
What I'm wondering is, could it fall under an exempt temporary structure if Mr. Bertolotto would sell coffee out of his main office, right? Because then it could...
It would be an extension, and it wouldn't be...
It would be exempt.
Right.
So...
The unfortunate part about that is we discussed that, and there would be a substantial improvement required to the building to be able to sell inside there, which would require the installation of ADA compliance bathrooms and a lot of other things that were very much not cost effective for the property owner.
So it's not just plugging in a Mr. Coffee and putting the quarter can out.
He originally came to us and wanted to put in the coffee at the drive-up window, which used to be there for the credit union, and allow some people to come inside to purchase. That's where the building
stuff.
Code and the ADA compliancy came in, requiring a new bathroom and quite an extensive amount of remodel.
Dave, I have one question for you. A site triangle, what are the specifications that you just mentioned for a site triangle? Who develops those specifications? Is that a DOT thing? Or
I believe the DOT came up with those originally, and we put them into our ordinance. They're basically in Title 30, which is the beautification regulation of advertising. We use that also for the placement of structures and buildings.
Any other discussion?
I'm just kind of wondering if anybody else has anything to say, because Bonnie made a lot of points and so forth, so I'm just curious if there's any other public input here on this. I guess if there's no other public input, I would move to approve.
First by Dave.
Second.
Second by Jason. We have a first and a second for use on review for a coffee kiosk. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by stating yes.
Yes.
Opposed, no. That motion carries unanimously. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.